Chapter 13. Bowlen. The Chateau at Pont de Brix, a room in the chateau, which is used as the imperial quarters. The Emperor Napoleon, and M. Gaspard Monge, the mathematician and philosopher, are seated at breakfast.
Officer, Monsieur the Admiral Dessers awaits a moment's audience with your majesty, or now, or later. Napoleon, bid him in at once at last. Villeneuve has raised the Brest blockade.
Enter Dessers.
What of the squadron's movements, good Dessers? Brest opened, and all sailing channelwards, like swans into a creek at feeding time?
Dessers, such news was what I'd hoped, your majesty, to send across this daybreak. But events have proved intractable, it seems, of late, and hence I haste in person to report the feedless facts that just have dashed my
Napoleon darkening. Well?
Dessers, sire, at the very juncture when the fleet sailed out from Ferrol, fever raged aboard Lille and Algeciras. Later on, mischief assailed our Spanish comrades' ships. Several ran foul of neighbors, whose new hurts, being added to their innate clumsiness, gave Hap the upper hand, and in quick course demoralized the whole, until Villeneuve, judging that Calder now with Nelson rode, and prescient of unparalleled disaster, if he pushed on in so disjoint a trim, bowed to the inevitable, and thus, perforce, leaving to other opportunity Brest and the Channel scheme, with vast regret steered southward into Cadiz.
Napoleon, having risen from the table,
what is, then, my scheme of years, to be disdained and dashed by this man's like, a wretched moral coward, whom you must needs foist on me as one fit for full command in pregnant enterprise.
Monge, aside,
I'm one too many here. Let me step out till this black squall blows over. Poor Dessers. Would that this precious project, disinterred from naval archives of King Louis Rain, had ever lingered fusting where 'twas found.
7. Exit Monge.
Napoleon, to help a friend you foul a country's fame.
Dessers, not only chose you this Villeneuve, but you have nourished secret sour opinions akin to his, and thereby helped to scathe stably based a project as this age has sunk to ripeness. Ever the French marine have you decried, ever contrived to bring despair into the fleet.
Why, this Villeneuve, your man, this rank incompetent, this traitor of whom I asked, no more than fight and lose, provided he detain the enemy a frigate is too great for his command.
What shall be said of one who, at a breath, when a few casual sailors find them sick, when falls a broken boom or slitten sail, when rumor hints that Calder's Tubbs and Nelson's may join, and bob about in company, is straightway paralyzed, and doubles back on all his ripened plans.
Bring him, bodily, hail him out from Cadiz, compel him up the channel by main force, and, having doffed him his supreme command, give the united squadrons to Gantome.
Dessers, your majesty, while umbraged, righteously, by an event my tongue dragged dry to tell, makes my hard situation over hard by your ascription to the actor's end of motive such and such.
Tis not for me to answer these reproaches, sire, and ask why years-long mindfulness of France's fame and things marine should win no confidence.
I speak, but am unable to convince.
True is it, that this man has been my friend since boyhood made us schoolmates, and I say, that he would yield the heel drops of his heart with joyful readiness this day, this hour, to do his country service.
Yet no less is it his drawback, that he sees too far.
And there are times, sire, when a shorter sight charms fortune more.
A certain sort of bravery some people have to wit, this same Lord Nelson which is but fatuous faith in one's own star swoon to the very verge of childishness,
smugly disguised as putting trust in God, a habit with these English folk,
whereby a headstrong blindness to contingencies, carries the actor on, and serves him well in some nice issues clearer sight would mar.
Such eyeless bravery Villeneuve has not, but, sire, he is no coward.
Napoleon, well, have it so.
What are we going to do? My brain has only one wish to succeed.
Dessers, my voice wanes weaker with you, sire, is not. Yet these few words, as Minister of Marine, I'll venture now. My process would be thus. Our projects for a junction of the fleets, being well discerned, and read by every eye through long postponement, England is prepared. I would recast them. Later in the year form sundry squadrons of this massive one, harass the English till the winter time, then rendezvous at Cadiz, where leave have to catch the enemy's eye and call their cruisers, while rounding Scotland with the other half, you make the channel by the eastern strait, cover the passage of our army boats, and plant the blow. Napoleon, and what, if they perceive our Scottish route, and meet us eastwardly? Dessers, I have thought of it, and planned a counter-move. I'll write the scheme more clearly and at length, and send it hither to your majesty. Napoleon, do so forthwith, and send me in Daru.
Exit Dessers. Re-enter Monge.
Our breakfast, Monge, today has been cut short, and these discussions on the ancient tongues wherein you shine, must yield to modern moils. Nay, hasten not away, though feeble wills, incompetence, imbecility, and some who feign to serve the cause of France, do make me other than myself just now. Ah, here's Daru.
Daru enters. Monge takes his leave.
Daru, sit down and write. Yes, here, at once, this room will serve me now. What think you, Villeneuve has just turned tail and run to Cadiz. So quite postponed, perhaps even overthrown my long-conned project against yonder shores, we're a juvenile snow-built device, but made for melting. Think of it, Daru, my God, how can I talk thereon? A plan well judged, well charted, well upreared, to end in nothing. Sit you down and write.
Napoleon walks up and down, and resumes after a silence.
Write this. A volt faced is indeed. Write, write.
Daru, holding pen to paper,
I wait, your majesty. Napoleon, first Bernadotte, yes. Bernadotte moves out from Hanover through Hesse upon Wurzburg and the Danube. Marmont from Holland bears along the Rhine, and joins at Mainz and Wurzburg Bernadotte. While these prepare their routes, the army here will turn its back on Britain's tedious shore, and, closing up with Augereau at Brest, set out full force due eastward. By the Black Forest feign a straight attack, the while our purpose is to skirt its left, meet in Franconia Bernadotte and Marmont, traverse the Danube somewhat down from Ulm, entrap the Austrian column by their rear, surround them, cleave them, roll upon Vienna, where Austria settled, I engage the Tsar, while Messina detains in Italy the Archduke Charles. Foreseeing such might shape, each high and by way to the Danube hence I have of late measured, mapped, and judged, such spots as suit for depots chosen and marked, each regiment's daily pace and bivouac writ table-wise for ready reference, all which itineraries are sent herewith. So shall I crush the two gigantic sets upon the empire, now grown imminent. Let me reflect. First Bernadotte, but nay, the courier to Marmont must go first. Well, well. The order of our march from hence I will advise. My knock at George's door with bland inquiries, why his royal hand withheld due answer to my friendly lines, and tossed the irksome business to his clerks, is thus perforce delayed. But not for long. Instead of crossing, thitherward I tour by roundabout contrivance not less sure. Daru, I'll bring the writing to your majesty.
Napoleon and Daru go out severally.
Chorus of the years,
aerial music,
recording angel, trace this bold campaign is thought a spun apace one, that bids fair for immortality among the earthlings, if immortal deeds may be ascribed to so extemporary and transient a race. It will be called, in rhetoric and rhyme, a son to sire succeeds, a model for the tactics of all time, he great campaign of that, so famed year 5, by millions of mankind not yet alive. Scene 2, the frontiers of Upper Austria and Bavaria, a view of the country from mid-air, at a point south of the River Inn, which is seen as a silver thread, winding northward between its junction with the Salza and the Danube, and forming the boundaries of the two countries.
The Danube shows itself as a crinkled satin ribbon, stretching from left to right in the far background of the picture, the Inn discharging its waters into the larger river.
Dumb show, a vast Austrian army creeps dully along the mid-distance, in the detached masses and columns of a whitish cast. The columns insensibly draw nearer to each other, and are seen to be converging from the east upon the banks of the Inn aforesaid. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.